Welcome back to the Blue Jays Plus podcast. I am Ewan Ross from Prince George, British Columbia, and you are?
Ian Turk in Thornhill, Ontario.
This week we'll be talking about Sean Nolan's short-lived debut in the major leagues, Esmo Rogers' surprising insertion into the starting rotation, Anthony Gose's surprising call-up. I'm going to rant about John Gibbons' managerial use today. Some roster questions when Jose Reyes comes back, whenever that will be. Our weekly roster moves segments.
Because what's a Blue Jays podcast without roster moves?
Exactly. Our minor league player of the week. An interview with Hardball Talk's Craig Calcaterra. And a bit on Brett Laurie's outburst today. So, getting started, I happened to miss Friday night's start by Sean Nolan, the rookie called up from AA, but Gideon, you got a chance to take a look at it, so let's see how, what'd you think?
Yeah, I watched it today. I had a few problems. First of all, his fastball was always in the zone. I think I'd say 80% of the fastballs he threw, they were all down the middle or high in the zone, so these hitters, all they were seeing was fastballs, and they knew it was coming. So the second they saw a fastball come out of his hand, they geared up to hit it. And not only that, if JP Arencibia was setting up down and away or down and in, anywhere down or on the corners, he was throwing it, he missed JPA completely and left it up in the zone. Then with the curveball, which is, I guess, like the only other pitch I really paid attention to, it was always hanging. He was missing spots with it, just like his fastball. And like Marshall said wrote in the article on Friday when he wrapped up his start, it's like they knew it was coming, that J.J. Hardy home run. He golfed it, and he wasn't fooled at all. Not only that, the fastball, also I have his Brooks Baseball Pitch FX tool. His average speed on fastball on Friday night was 89.49 miles per hour. He usually sits 92, and then 89 with the Rogers Center added bonus speed, I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of wondering what happened to his velocity all of a sudden, or if we were getting false reports from the minors, which never know.
I was noticing Jenkins as well today was missing JP with his target almost all the time.
Yeah, I did not like Jenkins today.
No, I'm surprised he only gave up three runs. But with Nolan, he's throwing... Oh, yeah, he did only give up two. But with Nolan, he's throwing that fastball half the time and only throwing his breaking pitches 20% of the time and then the changeup the rest of it. But if he's a finesse lefty, 89 isn't the worst thing in the world.
But he's not a finesse lefty.
He's not a power lefty, though, I wouldn't say. However...
Yeah, another problem I noticed, he could not finish the batters. His breaking pitches were not ready. He didn't have that out pitch established like a prospect who went through the system and didn't only have 7 or 8 starts above A-ball would have. He was getting to a lot of 2-strike counts, and then he would just not be able to... Well, I guess not a lot of 2-strike counts because he was barely in the game. But... when he did get to 2-strike counts, they were able to foul off pitches, and he just didn't have that pitch with a lot of movement or where he was able to command it to a place where they just couldn't hit it. He didn't have that out pitch that you see established pitchers have.
Would you suspect that he was tipping his pitches? You were saying that they were anticipating the breaking ball.
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
Probably. So, he's young. You never know.
That would be one concern if that were to persist. So he was sent down after the game, Thaddeus Weber called back up to the team, making our 24th pitcher of the year, two full rotations or pitching staffs have pitched for us thus far, which is concerning, and we've been kind of harping on that all year. But Esmo Rogers appears to be the next guy to take the spot in the rotation, and that will be our 10th different pitcher to start a game this year. What do you think about going to Rogers for that spot? We had some other alternatives, like going back to Ramon Ortiz or giving Nolan another start. What would you have done?
Honestly, I'm fine with it. Maybe he's been struggling. Maybe it'll help him. I doubt it, but you never know. I'm just happy with all we've been talking about with Anthopoulos and Gibbons. Their roster management has been horrible. I'm just happy they didn't go to Brett Cecil. I'm just happy they say, oh, Cecil's doing well. Let's put him in the starter role. Let him be comfortable in the relief role and see how he does. Now, Rogers, you might as well try everything. He hasn't been doing well in the bullpen. Maybe he'll do well in the rotation. He doesn't have success in the rotation in the past. He has like a 6.5 ERA or something like that.
Yeah, I was noticing that. But almost all of his starts, well, actually all of his starts in the major leagues came in Colorado. So it's possible that, and frankly, he was a great starting pitcher in the minor leagues until he got to Colorado Springs in AAA. And so if a guy's had no success or has struggled only in the high altitude of Colorado, maybe getting out of that will give him another shot. But I'm very reluctant.
How many innings do you expect Esmer Rogers to go? How many pitches can you expect a reliever pitching, starting for the first time since last year, go?
And
he's not stretched out at all.
He's not stretched out at all, so probably four.
Maybe he'll go 50 pitches, 60 pitches.
Yeah. And now that we're down to a 12-man pitching staff, you know, maybe now is the only time of the year I might advocate actually having that extra pitcher up on the team. That's why I think they should personally, I think they should give Nolan another start. I'm saying this without seeing the game on Friday, so, and I know he got knocked around, didn't strike anyone out, didn't get out of the second inning, but that's something that we've gotten used to. Our fifth starters have struggled all year. Why jerk the kid around? Give him one start in the majors and then he's right back down. I'd like to see them give him a little bit longer leash.
I don't know if you could do that. It's mostly because with the other pitchers that we've seen struggle in the fifth spot, it's not like they weren't ready for the majors. They either quad A pitchers or the Ricky Romero, right? With Sean Nolan, he's just not ready for the majors. His stuff isn't there yet where he can get major league hitters out. Let him go back to Double A for a few starts, progress him through Triple A, and then maybe call him back up. But right now, he's not ready. Like I said, he can't. He doesn't have that out pitch. His fastball was working fine, or I guess not so fine, he couldn't command it, but he was getting strikes with it, but he couldn't use the breaking ball to get the players out.
Which is surprising, because his strikeout rate in the minors was very good, well over a batter per nine, you know, every stop along the way. Did they send him down to Double A or Triple A?
Double A.
Back to Double A, that's surprising. I thought they would have possibly bumped him up because, you know, see what he can do at Triple A, because he's shown that he can get Double A hitters out, even if it is only a very small sample size.
Yeah.
Maybe try and give him another challenge there. But anyway, also in the roster shakeup news, we have Anthony Gose called back up to the team, which I was fairly surprised by, but upon reconsidering, while he'd struggled in AAA this year, slumping with a .227 batting average and bad on base percentage, no power,
getting thrown out,
which was more concerning, I was initially surprised they didn't go to Moises Sierra, who would provide more pop off the bench. But I think they want Ghost to be a defensive fill-in in the outfield more than provide a bat off the bench. So with Melky Cabrera's struggles defensively, Ghost might be the guy they want to go to. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. He shouldn't. Or at first, I thought he shouldn't have been up here. Sierra, he deserved it. He was hitting over 300. I think he still is. And he's tearing the ball down there in Buffalo. And he's, a fourth outfielder in his future, so I guess let him play his spot. But Ghost seems to look good, and he's hitting line drives. Ghost, like today, he hit one over Adam Jones's head that Adam Jones caught because bad luck, Blue Jays.
Very nice catch by Jones.
And another thing was, I don't know if you saw, the day before Ghost was called up, he had that interview in, I think, the Buffalo newspaper saying that, like, he's at the lowest point of his career and his confidence is shattered. So for a fourth outfield spot where it doesn't matter as much to the team, you have this top prospect like Ghost, maybe you call him up over Sierra because you want to give him this confidence. And he said he was shocked and it's such a boost that he's up here and everything. I don't know.
I like that as a theory. That's, you know, something to pump him up. But however, if he gets his head handed to him up at the major league level, that could be another blow to his confidence. The other reason I thought they might call Sierra up was because he's right-handed, and we have Rasmus and Lind, who you probably want to sit against more lefties than righties, obviously. He could have served.
Adam Lind doesn't care to sit. He just stands in the box and does not swing. Lefties, righties, Adam Lind will take his walks.
But that brings me to today's game, because I was fuming today because I really think John Gibbons tried to give the game away, frankly. Basically, in the seventh inning...
Before that, sorry to interrupt, but yeah, this is my one thing that I want to say on this topic, because I want to let you rant. But in the sixth inning, it was 2-1, and he brought in Thaddeus Weber in a 2-1 ball game. He brought in a quadruple-A pitcher to pitch in a 2-1 ball game, a 1-run differential, and he almost would have taken a lot of criticism for it. A lot of people are forgetting about it because he was able to escape with a double play, but I'm pretty sure it was first and third, or maybe it was bases loaded, that with one out, and he was able to escape with the double play. If he would have let in a run, John Gibbons would be hearing about it.
The bases were loaded, so... Yeah, I mean, he got Danny Valencia to foul out, and then Machado grounded into a double play, which, you know, if he's getting Manny Machado's up there, I'm scared having Thaddeus Weber at the plate or out on the mound. He's the worst pitcher on the team. I just don't understand. You've got a full bullpen. I'm aware that they had to pitch a lot on Friday with Nolan pitching, but that doesn't seem like the time to go to Weber in a one-run game.
Yeah, and Loop was warming up before, which is also curious because Gibbons is always known for, if you're warming up, you will get into the game. So if Loop was warming up before in the fifth inning when Jenkins was still on the mound, and then he sat down. So it's kind of curious.
That was curious. I actually hadn't noticed that, but yes, there's another reason to come out of Gibbons today. But let's get to the seventh inning because Mattis struck out the first two guys he saw, then walked Melky Cabrera, and Buck Showalter went to Tommy Hunter, who I've never had faith in, but has been very good this year. And Hunter was terrible today. Gave up a single to Bautista, a single to Encarnacion to load the bases, and then Adam Lind popped out on the first pitch. He's one of our hottest hitters, no big deal, but...
Especially, did you see where the pitch was?
Yeah, it was a groove.
High inside, he would have... He had to swing that.
No big deal. But there's one bases loaded opportunity in the seventh inning. Then we get to the eighth inning. At this point, Hunter has given up two singles already to the three guys he's faced. He then gives up a single to Aaron Sebia, hits Laurie to put runners on first and second with Anthony Ghost at the plate. Ghost then drops down a bunt twice or attempts to. I can't for the life of me understand why he's bunting in this situation. Yes, you would be putting the tying run in scoring position, but given that you were going to pinch hit Colby Rasmus for Bonifacio coming up after him, if Ghost gets that bunt down, all they're going to do is walk Rasmus, which Hunter wound up doing anyway, to pitch to Kawasaki. It completely negates the pinch hitter. Do you disagree with me here at all?
I do not disagree.
Yeah. The other thing is that the other main advantage that you would get there by Ghost bunting is that you take the double play out of play. But Ghost is so fast that it's almost going to be impossible to double him off. You've got Laurie going into second base where he's going to kill the second baseman because he's a lunatic. And you've got Ghost, the fastest runner on the team, going down the line. So there's no advantage there. And there's no real advantage by getting the guy on second base because Colby Rasmus is not a singles hitter. You're pinch hitting for him because you want him to hit a home run. That's all he does. He has the worst contact rate on the team. And so getting those guys to second base does them absolutely no good. But anyway, Hunter wound up walking Colby Rasmus, And then Kawasaki just singled over, I think it was Alexi Kaseya at second base on a very soft line drive, or bloop, or whatever you want to call it, to cash in one run before Hunter wriggled his way out of it. But again, you got the bases loaded for the second inning in a row, and, you know, they only got one run. Then you go to the ninth inning, and they had Steve Delabar and Casey Jansen warming up in the bullpen. Casey Jansen hasn't pitched since Thursday. And it's a one-run game. This team is desperate for wins, and he brings in Steve Delabar. Delabar hits Markakis, gives up two hits to... single to Adam Jones, a wild pitch, and an intentional walk.
It was not a wild pitch. I think they changed it to passball.
Oh, ESPN has a wild pitch.
Then they didn't change it. But it was not a wild pitch. Mm. It was all JP Arcevia.
Yeah, you're right. It probably was. But it was not a well-located pitch.
No.
So loads the bases up. Jansen is still ready in the bullpen and lets Delabar get out of it, but not before Adam Jones gives up doubles off into deep right center field to turn a one-run lead into a three-run lead, making it almost impossible to come back against one of the better closers in the league, Jim Johnson. Any disagreement here, or are you right with me?
Right with you again. It was, I guess, the second game this year that I've been furious with, along with all the rest of Jays Nation, with Gibbons. Exactly.
So this is one thing. The other thing that I didn't mention in the eighth inning, when he pinch hit Colby Rasmus, he didn't leave Rasmus in the game. Rasmus came out of the game, or did he?
He came out of the game, and Mark DeRosa came in to play second. Instead of having
No, what you should have done is you should have moved... You would have had to use Asturias at shortstop, taking Kawasaki out, and left Rasmus in center field.
Then who's playing second?
Sorry. Rasmus would have gone into center field, Ghost would have come out of the game, and Asturias would have gone...
to second.
Or DeRosa would have gone to second base.
Yeah.
But leaving Rasmus, who is your best bench bat, since he's on the bench today, in the game. So you get to the ninth inning...
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, because it's all about what do you value more, Colby Rasmus maybe having one more at bat or Anthony Ghost's defense.
You're down by a run. Who cares about the defense? You need to score.
Yeah.
Anyway, you get to the ninth inning. Encarnacion doubles, Lynn singles, Arencibia singles, and then eventually Ghost walks to load the bases. But Ghost walking should have been DeRosa, and then DeRosa up next, who grounded into a fielder's choice to score one run and make it a one-run game, should have been Rasmus. While DeRosa got the job done to a certain degree, and then Kawasaki bailed him out again with a double, how Munenori Kawasaki gets three RBIs in the last two innings of the game is beyond me.
Because he was born in Japan and he is a Japanese.
Oh man, I'm calling him Kawasaki. No, it's Kawasaki.
That interview today was priceless.
Yes, it was great. I love
the notebook.
Yes, and I love Jeff Sullivan saying that he wished he got to cheer for the good Kawasaki, because, yeah, he's such a fun guy to play with. Or at least to watch. Anyway, next
thing. Kawasaki's Woba is now over 300.
Mm-hmm.
Kawasaki fact of the day.
Well, that brings us to our next point, because...
we get to that, actually...
Yeah, go ahead.
You mentioned Brett Laurie's lunacy.
Yeah.
So there was a season ticket holder event after the game today, and I had a friend there, and he doesn't really... I wasn't there, but my friend was there, and he doesn't really know baseball, so he was asking me all these things, what he should tell the players and everything. So I told him to ask Laurie how many Red Bulls he has before each game. Take a guess. And what he answered.
Four.
He said three.
Three? That's Kevin Gossman like with the donuts.
Yeah, it's kind of insane.
He's a lunatic.
I shot him by today.
Yeah, we'll get to Lori later because he was an interesting case today. But brings us to Kisaki because he's been really good and really fun and really good defensively, at least compared to Bonifacio and Asturias. But what do we do when Jose Reyes comes back, whenever that's going to be? Probably in about a month's time?
Yeah, in June, early July.
Yeah, something like that. So the options that I see are, right now they have three infielders on the team. They have DeRosa, they have Asturias, and they have Bonifacio.
And Kawasaki.
And Kawasaki. Or Kawasaki. Only three of those guys can stay on the roster. Who do you think that should be?
I think it not only depends on how they perform over the next month, because maybe Kawasaki will go back to his performance of old. And like DeRosa, I don't want to get rid of. He is a valuable player against lefties, especially with Lind and Rasmus. And then Bonifacio and Asturias have been picking it up of late, but they both have negative WARs, and WOBA's under 260, and they're not performing at all. And then which one? Maybe there's a trade in late June or earlier July that somebody wants Bonifacio or Asturias. I can't really tell from right now which one I would want to leave.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best option because Kawasaki's the only one they can send down to the minors, I think. No, Bonifacio's out of options. Apparently, Asturias is not out of options.
DeRosa will clear waivers. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, but you can't have a bench that is Bonifacio, Asturias, Kawasaki, and Blanco. I mean, that's just not a major league bench.
Well, no. One of those guys would be playing second. Davis would be on the bench.
Davis would be on the bench or Ghost, depending on if he's healthy.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I'm not too enthused with that. With that as your bench. But so I think the best option is they should be potentially shopping Emilio Bonifacio as a trade candidate.
Yeah, I think he has the most trade value given all of his tools.
He's also not signed next year. Not that that's the biggest deal. If someone wanted Asturias,
nobody's taking him.
No, I don't think so. Is it a 3-year deal he's signed to?
3-year deal.
Yeah.
3 million a year.
If someone wanted him and someone has a shortstop go down to an injury, you know, that's possible.
Yeah.
But
I don't think you can get rid of Kawasaki. You know how in Out of the Park, do you play Out of the Park?
I do.
So you know how in Out of the Park where you get rid of somebody very valuable and it says the fans go crazy?
Yeah, same deal in
Kawasaki. There would be an uproar of Kawasaki, especially because of the huge contingent of Japanese fans there is in Toronto. And, well, anybody who just appreciates a solid hustle player who has been performing.
And defensively, I think you want to value that as your backup infielder.
Especially with Jose Reyes as your shortstop.
Because I don't want to see Bonifacio ever playing shortstop. And I haven't been thrilled with what I've seen from Asturias defensively, at least at second base. And I can't really recall him at shortstop too much.
And late in the game, when you're up by one, and Jose Reyes is coming off ankle surgery, and he already sucks at defense. Yeah, I don't want. I need a good defender to replace him.
Yep, or at least have that option. So that's what I think I would do. I think I might, you know, take a look around, see what you can get for Bonifacio. Because I'm not sure that I want to offer him arbitration at the end of the year. Because he's going to be fairly expensive. He's already making over $3 million, I think.
Yeah, him and Rasmus are non-tender candidates, for sure.
Oh, I don't think Rasmus is a non-tender candidate. I think he still has value. But anyway, not locked up. Could be cut. So this brings us to the rosterbation section of the podcast, which is weekly.
Sadly. And
we've already talked about two of them with Nolan and Anthony Gose. But with Nolan being shipped back down, Thaddeus Weber was called back up to the team for the first time and pitched today and wriggled his way out of a jam. Wait. Who did they call up to replace Oliver? That was
Sean Nolan.
But then Nolan then went back down.
And Weber came up.
And Weber came up, yes, of course. So Darren Oliver went on the DL earlier in the week. They called Nolan up to take that roster spot, sent him back down, and Thaddeus Weber is up. I don't know. I wasn't too impressed with him today, but...
Darren Oliver's hilarious.
How so?
When he was talking to reporters, he said he got a cortisone shot in his shoulder, and he said, I don't know why they didn't just do the entire body.
yeah, because he's old. And
too old for this.
He is too old for this blank. But I'm not too broken up about losing Darren Oliver because, frankly, he's been the worst guy of the regulars in the bullpen this year.
Aside from Esmer Rogers.
Yeah, him and Rogers have both...
Well, Oliver hasn't even been that bad. He has like a mid-3s ERA. He just blows up one game.
Yeah. But his peripherals have been fairly poor. I mean, a strikeout rate under 6 and a walk rate over 3 is not really something I'm looking for. So, you know, we can cope with the other two lefties in the bullpen still because Loop's still getting by on his magic deception, and Cecil, I think, has been our best reliever other than Casey Jansen.
Yeah, 100%. Cecil's been awesome.
Yep. So one more roster thing that I would like to bring up is while Adam Lind has been moved into the cleanup spot, like we said last week should happen, it did happen, which was positive. But I think they need to flip Colby Rasmus and Brett Laurie in the lineup, not only because Rasmus is hitting better than Laurie, which is kind of the tallest midget competition, but it also sets up a nicer left-right balance in the lineup. You agree?
I don't really see the... Oh, why? Because Rasmus and Lind are then back-to-back.
Yeah, because right now you have Lind... No. Lind is hitting fourth.
Aaron's, oh, true, yes. I'm looking at MLB depth charts and they have it wrong.
Yeah, they do. I noticed that today. So Aaron Sebia and then Laurie, as opposed to Aaron Sebia and then Rasmus, which is a whole lot of strikeouts and all. Whole shortage of walks back to back, but what can you do? Mm-hmm. Anyway, small tweak. Probably wouldn't make
much of a difference. Kawasaki should probably bat cleanup.
Absolutely. He can do everything. Pitch him.
He's a run producer. Proven run producer.
Proven run producer. 3 RBIs today. You know, we need a fifth starter. Why not put him there? See what he can do.
Esmer Rogers is doing it. You might as well try.
We've used 10 of them already. Give him a shot. Well, speaking of pitchers on their way back, hopefully, so that we don't have to see Rogers for too long, Josh Johnson has had 2 rehab starts in the minor leagues. One of them in Dunedin, a 3-inning outing, where he struck out 4 guys, which was very positive, and gave up 1 run. And then bumped up to Dunedin and pitched on Saturday. Pitched 4 innings, didn't give up a run, walked 1 guy, struck out 3. He's looking strong. The stats don't matter in the minor leagues because he is, you know, blowing away these...
He's not looking strong, though.
No?
No, his velocity is not where it's supposed to be.
I had read the opposite, but...
Really?
I can't recall where, so maybe I'm...
I think I was reading that it was 89-90. Which, I don't know, maybe that's what he sits outside of the Rogers Center.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't have a whole bunch of... As we were talking about with Nolan's velocity numbers, I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in velocity readings necessarily outside of the major leagues, but...
It's true.
Who knows? I think I'd rather give him a shot than see all this crap we've been seeing with, you know, the Jenkins and the... Rogers and Ortiz and Nolan's around.
So when does Josh Johnson come up?
Frankly,
Friday, I think, or Thursday, and then you in place of Jenkins, and then you have Jenkins start the next start that was supposed to be, I guess, Esmer Rogers's.
Yeah, I was hoping that he was going to take the fifth starter spot. I think that's Wednesday, but he'd be on 3 days rest, and there's no way I'm starting Josh Johnson on short rest. So, you know, I think he's probably up at least next week at the very latest.
Maybe one more start.
Yep. So that brings us to our minor league player of the week, who is Daniel Norris, who was a supplemental draft pick 2 years ago.
Two years ago.
And he has struggled mightily early on in his career. Last year at rookie ball, he had in 35 innings pitched, an ERA just under 8, struck out a lot of guys, didn't walk too many, but
his FIP was fine.
His FIP was fine,
but he was walking a ton. 5.87 batters per 9. Good enough for 12.2% walk rate.
That was at low A. But so anyway, he had an ERA of 8 and then got moved up to low A at the end of the year. Which is surprising. You'd think a guy at 19 years old wouldn't be moved up when he'd struggled so much. And after moving up to low A in just two starts, he had an ERA over 10, struck out half as many, his walk rate ticked up. But that didn't discourage them. He moved up again, start this year, into full season A ball in Lansing. And to start the year, he's been pretty much just as bad, with an ERA just under 7, still striking out a fair amount, but just a 2-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio.
But his past couple of starts have been amazing.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to get to. In his past three starts... He has an ERA under 1. He struck out 36% of the guys that he's faced and walked only 7%.
22 strikeouts in 12 innings.
Yeah. So that's really positive.
I think it's one of those cases where you see the FIP for all of last year being 3.8, 3.85, and then eventually he has to come around. Whoa. And now it's coming around, I guess, hopefully.
There's two possibilities there. There's one possibility where he's getting hurt by bad minor league defense.
Which is the case this year in Lansing.
Is it?
It is. The Lansing defense this year is historically bad.
Okay.
Apparently.
I was concerned that the other scenario might be that he is giving up lots of line drives, but if you claim the defense is bad, I will trust you.
No, that's what the Jay Blue, I think his name is, from BlueJaysFromAway.com or .blogspot.com. I don't know. He writes a minor league recap every game, and they always have a ton of errors, and that's just errors. So imagine what their range is like and whatnot.
Sure. Absolutely. But the comparison here with Daniel Norris is to Tyler Beattie, who was the Jays' first-round pick that year. I think 14th overall? Anyway, in the mid-rounds, or in the middle of the first round, and he decided to forego, I think it was $3.2 million to go to Vanderbilt. And I think the quote was that they valued a Vanderbilt education at more than $3.5 million, which I would think would disqualify you from going to a school as prestigious as Vanderbilt, because that's just ridiculous. But basically, instead of giving, the way it was perceived at the time is that the Jays took Norris and Beattie, and Norris
would kind of
fall back if they couldn't sign Beattie.
Yeah.
And Beattie is on track to be one of the top 10 picks in next year's upcoming draft. Not next week's upcoming draft, but the year after. And he's doing very well at Vanderbilt with an ERA just over 2 and more than a strikeout per inning, but lots and lots of walks, over 5 walks per 9 innings at Vanderbilt.
And he's not even pitching to the score. He's 14-0.
He's 14-0, yes.
Jack Morris does not like him.
Why? That's exactly what he's talking about.
But he's not. Oh, I guess so. True.
He's giving up the runs when they don't matter. Or at least walking the bases loaded when they don't matter. But, you know, the concerning thing to me with Beedy, I'd heard that Beedy was on track to be, if not the top pitcher, the top pitcher after Carlos Rondon next year of North Carolina. But comparing his numbers to the first three pitchers taken last year, Kevin Gausman, Mark Appel, and Kyle Zimmer, all three of them have walk rates half of what Beedy's doing in their age 20-year-old season. And so, I don't know, just looking at the stats, you can't really tell that much from college-level stats. But I would think that, I don't know, I'm thinking the hype on Beedy might be a little overblown. Because I was reading a Kylie McDaniel article, who we're hoping to get on the show next week, that his control needs to be refined considerably and that he potentially could slip out of the top 10 depending on how things go next year. So, if Beedy's not a top 5 pick, he made a huge mistake and definitely should have taken the Jays' offer. And if Norris can turn things around, maybe it's not the disaster it looked like it was, you know, a month ago.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Not really.
Yeah, so.
Not much of a draft guy, as in college. I love the draft, but I'm one of those guys who just finds out about all the draft picks that night and researches them that night.
Yeah, I've been doing a fair bit of reading into it, and I think we'll get into that a little more in-depthly next week. But that will take us to our interview with Craig Calcaterra of Hardball Talk at NBC Sports. So let's go to that now.
Welcome back to the Blue Jays Plus podcast. Today we are joined by Craig Calcaterra of Hardball Talk on NBC Sports. How's it going, Craig?
It is going well.
Great.
So the Jays are headed to Atlanta for a home-and-home series, or I guess they come here first. First up, I'm interested about Evan Gattis, who has sort of burst onto the scene as a catcher, you know, first base type. How's he doing it? How long is it going to last?
Well, he's doing it by kind of being what he's always been, at least for the short track record that he's had. He's got an amazing amount of power. There might not be a guy, Giancarlo Stanton probably, but as far as just the power tool goes, there might not be a guy as powerful as Gattis is. Now, he's not the hitter that someone like a Stanton is, obviously, and he's had a lot of good fortune early in the season, but he only has an on-base percentage of about .308, hitting .250. He can be fooled. He's still learning. He never really played above double-A ball, actually. So right now, I think a lot of pitchers are challenging him, seeing what he can do with stuff, and he's doing quite well with it, to be honest, depositing it very far away. The big question for him going forward is, where is he going to play? Because he got most of his playing time and certainly his opportunity in the bigs early this year because Brian McCann was hurt. McCann's back, hitting well. Gattis has gotten time in left field, gotten some time at first base due to the Freddie Freeman and Jason Hayward injuries. See where he gets a ton of his at-bats. I'm certainly sure you will see him in Toronto as he will probably DH or fill in for someone else who's DHing. But so far, so good for him.
How is he defensively behind the plate?
You know, better than I thought. I'd never really seen him. He was pretty competent behind the plate for as much as you can tell just with the old eyeball test. Pretty good receiver, frames pretty well. Plus defensive catcher, but, he acquits himself back there okay. He's a bit more of an adventure in the outfield, I will say that.
Okay, moving on from Gattis. Hello?
Yeah, one more.
Okay.
With Brian McCann's contract being up at the end of the year, does he look like a solution behind the plate if they let McCann walk?
You know, I'm not sure what they think about him as far as that goes. There is another catcher in the Braves system, and apologies because I am totally blanking on his name. I believe he's at Gwinnett right now. Younger guy than Gattis. Better defensive catcher that they're rather high on. So, obviously, if McCann was hit by a bus tomorrow, it would be Gattis' job. But I don't know if they have him in the plans for long-term at catcher. I think they're just going to try to see, wait, what happens? Maybe they can extend McCann.
Sean Gilmerton?
That would be him, yes. That sounds familiar. I have no idea how he's doing. I just remember him being talked about in the offseason as someone other than Gattis who might be a long-term solution at catcher.
Okay, so moving on to the bullpen. Coming into the year, it was supposed to be the best, one of the best, if not the best, in the MLB, and then both Johnny Venters and Eric O'Flaherty have Tommy John surgery and are both out for the year. And the Braves are now targeting bullpen help. What do they need? Specialist, overall, strong, long men? What exactly are they targeting?
I don't know that they really have their eyes set on a specific guy yet. They're obviously looking for the best guy they can. They probably do need a lefty specialist because O'Flaherty was really good about that. And Venters as well, to be honest. But I don't know that they're really looking at the market because the market is so horrible right now for relievers. There's just not a lot available. And what might be useful is going to be really, really expensive. I mean, you don't want someone like a Mike Dunn. You probably can't afford someone in terms of what it's going to take to get someone like a Glenn Perkins if Minnesota tries to sell off. Darren Oliver, ha ha ha. Yeah, you guys going to give us Darren Oliver. There we go.
So you can have him.
Yeah, okay, well, that's fine. That's cool. Old guys are cool too. But, to be honest, I think the Braves are going to sort of span pat, see what they have, because they're getting Brandon Beachy back soon, who has missed a year because of Tommy John. Excellent pitcher before he went down last year, and he's probably going to go back into the rotation. I don't think they want to mess around with him not starting because that's all he's ever done, but that's going to bump someone, whether it's a Chris Medlin, who, yes, he was a good starter last year, but he has a lot more time in the bullpen, and he's actually, even though he's a righty, he's very good against lefties, or Julio Teheran, has been really good so far in the rotation, but maybe he gets bumped because he's the young guy. So they are going to get an extra bullpen arm, a good one, who's currently starting. It's just a matter of who, and then maybe they're going to wait and see what happens.
Okay. You and you just want to talk about PG?
Yeah. In relation to that, do you think is Medlin the guy that you would move to the pen? Because it looks like the magic he had last year has sort of worn off a little bit.
Yeah, politically it's going to be hard because everybody fell in love with that second half that he had. But, I think people are forgetting that that was a move from the bullpen in the middle of the season and that it probably is not a sustainable approximation of what Medlin can do. I think I would move Medlin just because he's worked more out of the bullpen before. And I don't want to mess with Julio Teheran's development. He finally seems to be putting it together and he's got a very good top side. And, Medlin's someone who's gone back and forth and can deal with it. So if I had to pick one of those guys to move to the pen, I'd probably go with Medlin, assuming it wouldn't, screw with his brain.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was thinking.
After acquiring the Upton brothers this offseason, Justin has performed amazingly, and BJ has been, I don't know how to put it.
Horrible.
Horrible.
Yeah.
WRC plus of 41, WOBA of 231. He's just not. He's striking out a ton. JPR and CB alike. What is he? What's going on? How can he be fixed? When do the Braves decide to try to do something?
I wish I knew. He looks good. That's the thing. You watch him play. It doesn't look like he's lost. It's not like his timing is off, and it's not like he's hurt. He plays great defense, so, I think the Braves are going to keep him in there no matter how bad he does, just because, one, you don't want to make his brother mad. You just paid him a bunch of money, and he's a good defensive center fielder, and they could use that. So I don't think he's going anywhere. But, he has the most beautiful swing that doesn't come anywhere near a ball I've seen in a long time. I think that's kind of the best way to describe what BJ Upton's been. And you just kind of hope that he figures it out. I mean, they've gone through the same thing with Dan Uggla in the last couple of years, where he's just gone on these – streaks of months at a time where he has looked completely overmatched and horrible, and then just hope that he remembers who he is and can, you know, be a guy who hits 9 home runs in a month.
Okay. And you said earlier you were talking about Gattis, who are likely DH when they come to Toronto. As a Braves fan in the National League, do you like the DH, or do you prefer the pitcher batting, and why?
You know, I've been a National League fan for a long, long time, and I sort of have an affinity, a personal subjective affinity for pitchers batting, just because it's what I'm used to. I'm not saying it's better. It's just something that I like. And in fact, I have argued, and I'm increasingly coming around to the position that it's inevitable that the DH will extend to the National League, and I think that's probably the right solution, even if I don't like it for aesthetic reasons. I just think it makes a lot more sense as far as, like, the business of baseball goes about, you know, where the union is heading, where the league is heading. It would be a very easy thing if the league wanted something out of the union for the union to demand that the DH be extended to the National League, because it's usually a high-paying roster position and something that's good for them. And, you know, let's face it, pitchers, the game's becoming more and more specialized. Pitchers are not getting any better at hitting, even though they are far more athletic than they used to be. It's just nothing that is emphasized anywhere in baseball until you get to the National League. So I think it's a relic. It's one I like a lot. I think of it as vinyl records and landline telephones. They're things I sort of like in a lot of ways, but man, I just don't see the future in it.
Okay, finishing up, one of your, you know, recurring themes is trolling Aquaman and on your blog. Why do you dislike Aquaman so much?
This is probably a holdover from, you know, I'm almost 40 years old, so I used to watch the Super Friends cartoons back in the late 70s and the early 80s, and Aquaman was given more screen time for doing absolutely nothing back then than any superhero. I'm not lying. I remember a Super Friends episode where some giant monster is like attacking all of North America, and Superman's like, I'm going to go fight it. And Batman's like, I'm going to go try to find the guy controlling it. And Wonder Woman's doing something useful. And then Aquaman's like, this is literally his line, I'm going to go see how things are in the Great Lakes region. That was his line. You can even find it on YouTube. Even the writers for Aquaman had no idea what to do with him, and unless something was literally attacking from the sea, there was nothing to do. So maybe I'm a little prejudiced. I hear he's better in the comic books than he used to be, but I'm never getting over that.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's all we have for you. You got anything else, Gideon?
No. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks a lot, and go Braves, right?
No.
Boo. Oh,
and welcome back. We will be looking at the Blue Jays' upcoming week, where they head to Atlanta and San Diego. Go ahead, Gideon. Take it away.
Yes, so on Monday and Tuesday, they are home against Atlanta. Mark Burley and Tim Hudson in the matchup of old guys.
Finesse guys. I love it. That'll be fun.
And they're... Tim Hudson is 4.98 ERA, and is Mark Burley in his 5.9 ERA. It's a low-scoring affair.
Not allowed to talk bad about Tim Hudson. Tim Hudson's the best.
And on Tuesday, day game, it's Paul Mahomes against Brandon Morrow. Morrow's been kind of upsetting this year. Who knows what will come of him.
And Mahomes' been rather magical this year. He was off to an amazing start. I don't know how he's doing lately, but...
And the Jays head to Atlanta for the next two games, Esmael Rogers against Chris Medlin. That's going to be an interesting game to watch because of Esmael Rogers.
And Medlin needs to prove that he belongs in the rotation, as Mr. talked about.
Few starts are going to be important.
Beachy is already on a rehab assignment. So, yeah.
Then Thursday is the marquee matchup of this series, I guess, with R.A. Dickey versus Mike Minor. You've got the pitcher having success right now, and the pitcher had success last year going up against each other.
Minor, who hit a home run yesterday.
He hit a home run?
Yep.
R.A. Dickey can do that, maybe.
Yes. I don't think so.
Then Friday, I guess, would either be Chadwick Jenkins or Josh Johnson. I guess we'll have to wait and see for that against a to-be-announced Padres pitcher that I do not have here. Oh, West Coast games.
Yes, West Coast games.
Hate West Coast games.
Right in my wheel.
Saturday would be Burley against another to-be-announced Padres pitcher that I do not have on BlueJays.com right now.
Says Marquis in the first game. Marquis versus Jenkins, and yeah, don't know who's going against Burley.
And then Sunday, which is a weird 10 o'clock start, even for a Sunday, we're getting the West Coast treatment late at night, would be...
That game's not going to be on TV.
Why not?
Because it's a Saturday night game, and it's not on ESPN.
But it starts at 10. I'm sure Sportsnet has it.
Oh, Sportsnet.
Are they not allowed to have it?
It's an American rule, so...
Oh. And then, yeah, who's pitching that day?
It'll be Anderson Volquez for the Padres against Brandon Morrow.
And that's the week.
So no DH.
The Jays have to sweep San Diego.
They are awful, and yeah, I picked them in the division. So yeah, go me.
It's gonna be interesting to see how that DH situation works out.
It wouldn't shock me to see Lind get some time in left field, give Cabrera a day off.
Because how much worse can Lind be than Cabrera right now?
Defensively, who knows? And
although give Cabrera
just his legs.
Two of the Braves games are against lefties. Oh, so and only one of them is without a DH, so on Wednesday against Medlin. So I guess you don't really have to use... Oh, but then Lind would be sitting three games in a row and it caused problems because then Marquis is a lefty also, right, on Friday?
Nope. Marquis a righty, I think.
Oh, okay, so then never mind. So maybe you start Lind in left field on Wednesday? I haven't heard anything about him taking or shagging balls in the outfield, so...
Yeah, maybe we're just speculating for no reason.
Probably
so, yeah.
They are. As long as we don't see Encarnacion at third or left, I am good.
Exactly. So, yeah, our music this week, which I'm going to start mentioning, is DJ Shadow Introducing, which is, in my opinion, the best album of the 90s from 1996, and it was fantastic. You should go listen to it. And then housekeeping. You can follow me on Twitter at Mentoch, MENTOCH, and yourself.
At Gideon Turk, GIDEONTURK, and at Blue Jays Plus. I'm not going to spell that.
Nope.
Coming up this week, what do you have?
I'm going to be writing about a potential Brett Laurie contract extension, looking at comparables to the Anthony Rizzo contract and similar early in arbitration, pre-arbitration extensions.
I hope to have three articles up, one about McGowan that I started last week. I still haven't had a chance to write. The Arrested Development comparing to Blue Jays article that should be up later on Monday. So I guess when you're listening to this, probably it's up. And an Adam Lind praise article comparing Adam Lind to other high-profile, high-money-making sluggers like Albert Pujols, who Adam Lind is currently doing better and getting paid a fraction of the price.
He has been one of the more pleasant surprises this year. So that's all for us this week. And join us next week.
Go Jays, go.
Go Jays, go.
Side.